Welcome to Facilitating the Mission. In this episode, we'll finish up our interview with missionaries Byron and Emily Johnson. The Johnsons are Shepherd Staff missionaries serving in Ukraine. If you missed part one, download it from this podcast landing page on our website.
So then you end up going to Uganda, right?
Yeah.
How long were you guys there?
We were there 7 months, and we served Calvary Chapel in Tebe and Potter's Field Ministries there, and it was great healing time. Just, you know, getting our hands dirty, serving in Uganda was great, and definitely difficult seasons and difficult moments there. But as far as like healing from the trauma that happened in Ukraine, the Lord really started to restore that in us and give us a joy back, I guess you could say. And and when our commitment was winding down there, the Lord kind of refocused our vision and our passion for Ukraine again. And so after our 7 month commitment there, we moved to Kiev, Ukraine, just to see what the Lord would do. Kind of starting over again, we're like, okay, let's see what the Lord will do. We know that we're called to Ukraine. It's very clear. So we moved to Kiev, Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. And they were, the Calvary Chapel there, they were very gracious. They allowed us to come serve with them. And one of the pastors just kind of noticed that, you know, we were there, but we weren't really actively doing ministry. We were working with a couple orphan girls. They had moved in with us. We had a transitional home with them because we had met them in Donetsk, and their orphanage had evacuated to Kiev. So it was cool that we got to reconnect with them. But anyways, this pastor was like, you know, you guys don't have kids. You seem like you're willing to do anything, really. So why don't you consider moving to Zaporozhye? They've been without a pastor for a number of years. And my first thought was, oh gosh, back to the east. And I was really scared that war could come there again. And Bart, oh man, I'm not a pastor. How am I supposed to take over a church?
Again, the Lord is just so faithful to direct. You know, the proverb, the man plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. And so like we were always planning and trying to figure out what we're doing. And then the Lord just totally directed our steps and just showed us one step at a time. And that's how we ended up in Zaporozhye, pastoring a Calvary Chapel. Close to Donetsk, but still in the, you know, still our hearts still in eastern Ukraine, and the Lord brought us back here. And it's special to me. Zaporozhye is special to me because really just looking at all the things the Lord did to get us here, He used the war to get us to Zaporozhye. And so it's really special. The people here are really special to me because I just see the love and care that the Lord has for them and how He so drastically moved our lives around just to get us to this point.
Yeah.
And when you guys were in Colorado after returning from Donetsk, and then that whole, I mean, you referenced, you know, Dave's counsel of finding some place to go for maybe a short season or whatever. And then when you went to Ukraine, I mean, what level of engagement did, you know, Pastor Ed and Dave and the church have in that whole leg of the journey?
Man, so I remember they did, they do March for Missions. And so every March in the sanctuary, they hang up flags for all the nations. But then that one year they had their supported missionaries hanging flags in the front. And it was after, it was when we were in Uganda and Pastor Ed hung the Ukraine flag up in the front because he knew our heart to return to Ukraine someday. And that was huge, just to still have their support, to know that, you know, they're still praying for Ukraine with us. They're still hurting for Ukraine with us.
That is so huge.
And so that was just a moment I really remember, like, because I remember him explaining, like, we have Ukraine here. Byron and Emily aren't there at the moment, but we're praying and hoping in faith that they'll return someday.
And we did.
So,
yes, you did. A couple other things I want to you know, kind of explore specific areas. Number one is Emily. So tell us a little bit about the reality of being a type 1 diabetic and living the kind of life you've been living, with access to insulin, access to medical professionals, and then the reality of, you know, what type 1 diabetes does in a person that has its body.
Yeah. Well, like, first of all, I'm just really thankful that I was born in 1988, because yes. You know, people who were even born, you know, like in just in the beginning of the 80s, they maybe wouldn't have had a glucometer in their home. And here I am, like, I can just cruise across the world basically and serve the Lord. Like missionaries in the 1800s, you know, done that. If they were diabetic, they probably would have just died too. So I'm really thankful that the Lord gives me the ability to do the things that I do. But I think, like, it's a tough balance, because I'm always having to balance my health and ministry. And I think it can weigh hard on Byron sometimes too, because, yeah. You know, things happen and sometimes we run out of insulin. We've never completely run out, but that's another way that the church has really stepped in, and not just Calvary Aurora, but different Calvary chapels that, you know, I'll write on Facebook, like, anybody coming out to Ukraine, I need a batch of insulin soon. And Nick Katie brought me insulin last year he's from the Springs, right?
Longmont,
yeah. Colorado. And right. I never even met him in person. And like, he brought me the insulin to get me through the next 6 months to live here and to be alive. And so, I don't know, just being diabetic and getting all these blessings from the Lord, it confirms to me my calling, you know, because there's right. So many bad things that could happen all the time to me. And maybe they still will, I don't know, but like, the Lord just takes care of me. Like, no one else can. He takes care of me better than my dad could, better than my husband could. I can trust him with my health, even when, or even if things go sideways. So,
mm-hmm. So Emily, you're not able to connect with the local medical services there?
You know, they don't have a lot. I'm on an insulin pump and they don't have a lot of that technology here.
I
really don't use the medical services here at all. If gotcha. I can, but you know, my doctor is really cool about it, and she lets me email her, and I can ask her questions. But yeah, the insulin here, from what I have read, it can sometimes they'll cut some of it with saline.
I see.
Oh yes.
A little further, things like that, and maybe even that's not true. But I'm nervous about it. I'm nervous to try it. So. Yeah.
This is really dynamite information to have in this podcast, because there's people that you're thankful for the technology and medical advancement and the way you're able to be connected to your doctors. But there's people that God's called into missions that think they can't do it because of a medical issue. I'm not saying this debunks that, but like you pointed out, you know, 100 years ago, you know, the wife didn't even have to be sick. Most missionary wives stayed home while the missionary husband, you know, kind of went out and did it. But that's really an awesome testimony about your medical condition. Thanks for sharing that with us.
And it's really true, like, where the Lord leads us, what he calls us to do, he equips us, and not just spiritually, but like, we're seeing it physically. He's giving Emily, you know, that was always my biggest concern as the husband, like, how do I move my wife across the world and take care of her stuff. And the Lord is always just teaching, you know, to trust in his grace, and that he equips and he gives exactly what we need. And he's been so faithful the last 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see. It's amazing. He's just working in mighty ways. And it's amazing.
Has having type 1 diabetes, has that given you some connections with people there too? I mean, have you engaged at all with Ukrainians that have type 1 diabetes?
You know, I have only met a couple type 1 diabetics here, and actually only just a few in the States too. I know that there's a lot of us. We're connected on Instagram now. But I think that my diabetes, it's kind of polarizing, I think, for people.
Okay. Right.
If you're someone who has a health problem, then we can connect in a special way, and I can encourage them. They can encourage me. But sometimes, especially in the Christian culture here, if you have some type of ailment, it's your fault.
Mm.
Don't want to be healed bad enough, or you did it to yourself. And so, yeah, so it can be kind of almost even a stumbling block, I think, to some people, that the pastor has a wife who doesn't have enough faith to be healed. But we just say, like, that's not true. You know, that's not what Jesus says. That's not what the Bible says. And, you know, John 9:1-3, the blind man was blind so that Jesus would have glory. And I'm diabetic so that Jesus will have glory. And
right.
it, regardless of someone else's.
Yeah, that's very insightful.
I mean, really, it takes more faith to go be a missionary when you have your condition than it would be to not be in your condition.
Well, and it, and like you said, Emily, it really declares it's a greater amplifier for the glory of God that
totally.
With this condition, which is truly life threatening, and which needs that kind of attention and care, that you would disconnect yourself from a place where you could get all that medicine very easily and take care of yourself. But now you're on the other side of the world and you're having to put all this effort into maintaining your health. I think that declares the worth and the value of the Lord in an incredibly unique way that is probably, I mean, I think that's what bringing glory to the Lord is all about, is declaring his worth and value. And that's a lot of times really on display by what we're willing to disconnect from to represent him.
I just think of the daily idea of watching one more packet of insulin go away, one more packet of insulin go, you know, just watching that box get empty, that would wear me down. And, you know, I applaud you. And it's so awesome to hear that, you know, people bring you insulin and it makes me want to Google, how do we get insulin too?
We posted it once on Facebook, anyone coming out to Ukraine, and there was a guy in the Calvary Aurora, and him and his wife are pilots or
flight attendants.
Yeah. And they said, hey, we'll just come out there and bring it for you guys.
We'll just cruise over.
And we were like, what? Like, so many people were just willing to come.
That's awesome.
So cool.
We actually had to say no to these people.
We already had too much help.
Because
you know?
People already had agreed and had tickets and were bringing me medicine. So like, talk about the church taking care of the church, you know?
Yeah, man.
It's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Just people having that exposure to your work. God's totally at work in this.
Yeah.
So tell me more about, well, we haven't actually talked about it all, but we got to get around to language and culture acquisition.
Can I sneak in a quick question to only take a second to answer? Because it kind of goes along with culture. I'm curious about the political climate there pre and post war. I mean, is it a different place to live now that this war has happened, or are things just back to normal?
Actually, the war is still ongoing in Donetsk, and so that has caused economic problems. Firstly, the currency has totally dropped since we first came out here, and so people are either losing jobs or just not making enough money throughout the country. So whether you're in Eastern Ukraine or not, people are suffering that way. And on one hand, you could say people are just going on like life, like normal. But on the other hand, you see just like the, I don't know, maybe the stress, especially where we're at, we're only a 2-hour drive away from the war zone, 2 or 3 hours. And so there is that continual stress or fear that, you know, the war could progress, and just as easily as it came to Donetsk, it could easily come to Zaporozhye. Yeah. And so I think that people are still struggling with that fear of the future.
And actually we had martial law in January or March or something this year, mm-hmm. where, you know, everything was locked down. There was a heavy military presence and Zaporozhye was under martial law. And so it weighs on the people, you know, it has to. Because you don't know what's going to happen. And that was the time we wrote Ed and this guy, Randy, who's an awesome brother at the church. He's in the U.S. military. And sometimes we write him and say, hey, we're struggling with this PTSD issue. Or what do you think about martial law? Do you have any advice? So they've been really supportive in that. But I think, like, for the most part with the political stuff, like, we really try to stay out of it as much as we can. People...
Very
strong
divisive.
Opinions, strong enough to have wars, you know?
Right.
And so for us, like, our personal opinion is not important enough for them to walk away from the church. And so we just say, like, you know, we're about kingdom culture. We don't have time. There's too much to do.
Right. Back to the issue of language and culture.
Yeah, that goes along with the language, because the official language of Ukraine is Ukrainian.
Right.
But we speak Russian and we've been studying Russian. And so so even Western Ukraine is more Ukrainian. Eastern Ukraine is mostly Russian speaking.
Our city is a Russian speaking city.
And so just even the language thing has become political
and polarizing.
And so we're, you know, we're struggling away, just trying to be able to communicate. And people are like, hey, why aren't you learning Ukrainian? And I'm like, I just want to speak with you guys. So, you know, and so it's been difficult. I think even in the church, it's been, in general, not our church specifically, but the church,
the
global church of Ukraine, like, you know, it's been divisive whether you speak Ukrainian or Russian.
You have, you know, worship songs in Russian, you have worship songs in Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. We go down the middle on the worship. Mm-hmm. We just have both.
Mm-hmm. So, but we've been, yeah, we've just been studying and just plugging away, trying to learn and deal with the language, just, yeah. You know, because it's not easy. We get by, we communicate. We're still studying, but it's you know, the first couple of years are just a nightmare.
Yeah. So are you, do you navigate day to day then in Russian?
Yeah.
If you're not talking to each other, obviously you're interacting with nationals, you're able to do that in Russian.
Yeah, we do. We do pretty much everything in Russian. Mm-hmm. I'll still teach and preach in English with a translator, but everything else we do through in Russian.
And we've kind of entered into a new season in ministry where if, unless it's an extremely serious situation where, you know, we don't want to make a mistake with our language, we'll even do counseling in Russian now for people. Mm-hmm. And that's really broken down a lot of barriers.
Yeah.
Nice.
For people to feel like they can come to us, you know, adding a third person is hard, you know, especially if someone's trying to pour out their soul to you. And so being able to talk one-on-one with them in Russian is really cool. And so we pray about our language a lot. And I know Calvary Aurora prays for us too. We ask them every once in a while, like, hey, can you just pray for, you know, our language, like Moses, that our tongues, God made our tongues. Please ask him to make them work. So.
One other quick question. With your, I mean, you guys have been out there going on 7 years. You got a clear, tight connection with the church in Aurora, with Pastor Ed and so forth. Is there, have you had during your time out there, is there a small core team of people within the church that have really, you know, embraced you guys and expressed care for you? Or has it just sort of been on a broader church-wide scale?
It's been different seasons. We've had different groups of people. And so when we moved out, the missions pastor was Dave, and then he moved to Thailand and JJ took over. So there was some transition where we lost contact with some people, and then we've got new people on board. And so it's gone in seasons. We do this thing called prayer partners, and we send out a weekly prayer, just a few prayer requests every week. And we ask the church if anyone wants to be on our prayer team. And people will sign up and unsubscribe here and there. And really, I think that's kind of the core group of people who are always checking in on us, and we're always updating them. And so we kind of have an ongoing conversation about our ministry and our needs. And they're usually pretty faithful at responding. And the group has changed over the years, but, you know, we always have that core group of prayer partners, which is awesome.
So, like, as far as like pastoral care and things like that, for us here in Zap, we have a team of servants, but I would say all of the care that we receive, not give, I think it still comes from Calvary Aurora.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Okay, now I'm going to ask you kind of an off-the-wall question, because I want to hear, I have my own explanation for it, but I want to hear yours as somebody who lives in that country. What's your take on saying Ukraine instead of the Ukraine?
Oh. You got to say Ukraine. The Ukraine, it's for the people here, if the people speak English here and they hear the Ukraine, it's offensive. Yes. Because it implies that it's not a sovereign state and that it's just a region of Russia, and they want to be known for their independence. And so in Russian, if you add the preposition, it's very derogatory. So in English, it sounds not so... If the Ukrainian speaks English, they're not a big fan of that. And so for me, I've taken that on. I love Ukraine, so I really want people to know that it's just Ukraine because it's a sovereign state.
Yes. Uh-huh. So. Yeah, I agree. And I have friends. That's kind of, I mean, I've thought about that for years. But when you say the Ukraine, And again, Americans don't know the difference,
yeah,
generally speaking. But, you know, you're basically, it sounds like you're talking about your, you know, you have your home and then you say the bedroom. It's implying that it's a piece of something larger. It's not sovereign. We don't say the Japan. We don't say the Mexico.
Yeah, I thought it was like going to Oregon and saying Oregon. But it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Ukraine has such a rough history with Russia over the, especially the last 100 years, but over 100 years. And so it's a very sensitive topic, and Ukrainian people are their own nationality, their own people with their own language. And they just want to be recognized as that, that they're not just part of Russia or being stepped on by Russia, but they've got their own country.
So just to clarify, if you're saying the Ukraine, it's like saying the Ukrainian province of Russia. Is that the implication?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
For Ukrainians. For Ukrainians. I don't.
Uh-huh. No, just to give listeners some context.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's offensive to them. And again, that's not our role. And if we, you know, if you know a little bit about their history or whatever, you could understand that. All right. So are you sensing that progress is being made in the church plant and potential leadership developed downstream? And I mean, do you envision yourself being there and then transition this church over to a national at some point in the future?
Yeah, our heart's always been church planting and then moving on, planting or helping another church. And so we've been here in Zaporozhye 3 years, and I've seen the Lord do some progress. We've gone forward and we've gone backwards. So it's hard to say, you know, I know the Lord's working. There's many things happening that we don't see, but we're in a season. I feel like we're going to have to be here a little longer, and that's okay. And just waiting for the Lord to raise up the leaders in his timing. And we're going to just keep being faithful, doing what he's called us to do. And so that's my hope. That's my prayer, is that a Ukrainian man would just rise up and be the pastor. I think that's the most healthy for the people here, mm-hmm. is to have a Ukrainian leading them. So that's our goal, but we don't know how long it'll take.
Are you guys at all connected with the Bible College in Hungary? Are you part of that network of churches and pastors?
Yeah, we are. We have a Calvary Pastors Conference twice a year in Kiev with mostly Ukrainian guys. The last few years, Hungary guys have been coming too, and we're trying to be more connected with them. And I know that some of the guys who've been here longer from Kiev and different cities, they're really tightly connected with the Bible College.
But you're saying that Hungary sends a team to you all?
No. Usually Ukrainians go to Hungary.
Gotcha. Okay.
But then we're doing pastor conferences here for Ukrainians, and sometimes
here meaning in Ukraine.
Yeah, and sometimes we'll send, you know, a pastor or someone to speak at our conferences. Yeah. But
we're not like super connected because it's just geographical for us. Like for living in Kiev or even a little more Western or Northern, it's easier for them to connect with the Bible College, but we're 12 hour by train to Kiev. And so then moving, you know, from here to, or traveling by train from here in Zaporozhye to Kiev and then flying to Hungary, it can take a really long time. So we just gotten as connected. And I think it probably would be hard for the students to get to us too, because we're so far. But we're open to it if Lord opens that door.
Yeah,
I was just curious of what kind of a network you had. I visited Hungary and just was blown away by what's happening in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, I met people from all over the place. I know people had traveled, you know, further than I did. And I came from the East Coast of America, but it seemed like this trip that you're describing is way, way longer than the trip that I took from Florida to Hungary, believe it or not.
No. Yeah. But yeah, we do. There's like a Calvary National Conference for Ukraine. So we're really connected with the Ukrainian churches, but outside of Ukraine, it's not. Oh, okay. Yeah, we're not so connected.
Well, Brian, you have any other questions before we wrap this up?
Now, I'm just so amazed at what the Lord is doing in Europe. And, you know, I applaud these guys for you know, sticking out the political situation and the instability and the economic up and down and the medical. I mean, this is a huge testament. I mean, you listen to these guys, they sound like a couple of hipsters from Starbucks yeah. I mean, their life is on the line, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Totally the Lord, you know, so we're just honored and privileged to serve him.
Yeah.
I just love hearing how normal you guys are. And just, I just love hearing how you're connecting and how you've picked up where somebody else kind of left off, and just so open. So God's doing some big things, and this is like one of the best kept secrets that there is, I feel like, you know.
Come out and visit us.
I would love to.
Yeah. You know, I went to Minsk many years ago, actually 1995. I was in Minsk when there was a couple of Calvary people there from my home church, but I haven't been over there. And, you know, I know I'm really good friends with Jed Gourley and of course the Markies. And so I've had, you know, they're always like, you got to come over there. And I've just never gotten around to getting over there, but that is somewhere on my path down the road, I hope. But yeah, it's been really good to talk with you guys. I appreciate, you know, your honesty and your transparency. And clearly, I think there's going to be a lot of people that listen to this that are going to be, you know, sort of, I think, inspired to maybe because of the circumstances in your lives, people are going to be challenged to consider, hey, maybe God can use me in ways that I never dreamed of before. And then also they'd be aware of how to pray for you guys and so forth. And I, again, as I'm sure you know, because I experienced this myself, the level of care that I got from my home church when I was sent direct to the field was phenomenal. In fact, it was the roots of Shepherd Staff, the way I was cared for by my pastor, my church, the elders, the members of the church. And so, you know, you guys, I'm sure you know this because you know other missionaries, that your level of connection with your home church is fairly unique. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the reality of it. So I know you guys never take that for granted. And that's the role that, you know, we play as a ministry, is trying to get home churches to, in a sense, do what your home church is doing for you. So really good to talk to some people that are being blessed by sort of the model that we believe God's given us to help facilitate. So appreciate you taking the time.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.